Okay, so this is class number 40 of Derech Hashem. We're doing the chapter on theurgy, and we're going to start it again, or do a review again. So the word, let's start with the word theurgy. This is a whole interesting concept. Until now, the book has really been discussing the nature of the world, the relationship between Hashem and the world, between our own selves, our bodies, and our souls, how the world works, how Hashem has set up the framework for how things manifest in the world. So that's where it's been going. And we just finished discussing souls and the anatomy of the soul and how it functions. But now we're going into a separate thing, really discussing not how the convergence of the natural world and the spiritual world and how they can work in a way out of sync. So I'll explain what I mean. So the word theurgy is an interesting word. To me, it's like the word for tefillin in English, phylacteries, which, you know, like, why say that in English? Because it doesn't mean anything except for what it means. Except for it turns out, I looked up on Wikipedia that theurgy actually does mean something in English. Let me find it again. Theurgy is from the Greek word, which I can't read in Greek, describing the practice of rituals, sometimes seen as magical in nature, performed with the intention of invoking the action or evoking the presence of one or more gods, especially with the goal of uniting the divine, achieving henosis, which is a Greek word, and perfecting oneself. So it turns out that theurgy is used in a few different religions, as in English world, in Neoplatonism, it says, in this Wikipedia article, it talks about the Emperor Julian, esoteric Christian theurgy, and Jewish theurgy are what's listed. So, of course, we're only looking at Jewish, but what this really means. So let's go to the Hebrew, because that's a little bit better than, let's say, the English catch-all word of theurgy. B'inyan ha'pu'la b'shemot u'v'chishuf. Okay, so the concept here is how we make things function with the Shemot Hashem and with magic. So in order to get to that, let's just look at more of an introduction. So these thoughts are based on Rabbi Avraham Yaakov Katz, who writes a commentary to Derech Hashem in English in the book Pathways to the Way of God. So he discusses the concept of naming things. So we have two different ways of naming. The human way of naming is to look at something, then form a concept of what it is, so observation, and then conceptualization, and then giving it a name so that we can then communicate what that is to somebody else. Right? So when Adam named all the animals, everything was brought to him to be named, we understand that he was able to give it a name, a shame, by understanding ma shesham, what's there, what's in it. The Midrash there is very interesting. Talks about how he was intimate with each animal. We understand that the word intimacy in Hebrew, dat, really is creating an ultimate connection with something, to be able to understand its essence on an essential level. So that's what Adam was able to do, to really experience something, to be able to understand its essence, to give it a shame. But Hashem does it in the opposite way. So his four-part process looks more like this, right? So first Hashem created the Aleph Beit, and then he formed those letters into words, creating a Devar. So we know that Devar and Devar can mean, the two words Devar mean word and thing. So the word is causative of the thing. So first Hashem, creates the letters, then he arranges the letters, and then creates the letters and then sort of a concept which he arranges into letters. And then he creates malachim, or kochot, angels or spiritual forces that are capable of manifesting that concept and then are charged with the mission to manifest the concept. And then fourth, the concept is manifested into the thing, the actual dvar is created. So do you see that, the opposites of that?
Can you go over the second one more time?
Yeah. So coming from Hashem, let's just start, I'll back up a little bit. So we understand when we look at the first pasuk in the Torah, our Kabbalists tell us that the first thing Hashem created was letters, right? So the first pasuk is Bereishis bara Elokim es hashamayim ves haaretz, right? So, but if you punctuate that differently, you just get Bereishis bara Elokim es, period. In the beginning, Hashem created et. Right? So et is aleph and taf. In the beginning, Hashem created the aleph beit. And through the aleph beit, shemaim va'aretz. So we understand that letters are causative of creation on a Kabbalistic level. So the first thing Hashem did was create the letters. Then he arranged the letters into a word, and then the word causes, then there's a chain of events where the word is causative of the physical object being manifest in the world. What comes in between the word that Hashem created, the arrangement of the letters in Shemaim or whatever upper spiritual realms, and the actual physical manifestation is a malachic transformation, if you will, an angelic transformation of concept to actualization. So malachim, do you know what a neurotransmitter is physically
mm-hmm.
in a body?
Right.
Yeah? So malachim are like spiritual neurotransmitters. A neurotransmitter is that which brings our own thought into action, right? So if we have an itch and we want to scratch it, first of all, the itch, even to be able to perceive the itch on our cheek, right, it has to go from irritation on cheek, and then a neurotransmitter brings that sensation to our brain, which then processes, okay, what should I do with this? Let me scratch it. So the thought of scratch starts, and then in order to make the scratching process work, a neurotransmitter has to transmit from brain to finger to hand, rise up, touch cheek, scratch. Right? So it's the neurotransmitter that makes it happen, that makes it, that is in between thought and action. So that's what malachim do in the universe. They are what's in between Hashem's thought, so to speak, and action in the world. And that's what the malachim, that's the angelic realm. So that's what they do. They transmit, they cause to make happen Hashem's thought. That's what they make them into reality. So they're charged with that. So that's what's happening here. Hashem first creates the letters, and then the word, which equals the idea. And then he creates malachim to make that idea into something real. That's step three. And step four is the actual concretization of that idea in the physical world. So let's just say a table, right? So Hashem first has letters and then puts them into order. I don't know if Hashem's word for table is shulchan, but let's just assume for the purposes of this discussion that he arranges those letters, right? The shin, the chet, the lamed, the nun. And then he creates malachim, who are malachim of shulchan energy. And then they are charged with creating a shulchan. And they bring Hashem's energy and make it manifest in the physical realm. And then you have a table in your room.
Hmm. So how does that work with what we do?
Well, so you could say that what you have really manifest is the oak tree. Right,
okay.
And then we have to make that tree into the table. But still, there's a malach that allows that energy to happen. And if we understand on the wider spectrum, there's not, I mean, we have this concept, there's no such thing as a blade of grass that grows without a malach hitting it and saying grow. So we understand there's a spiritual energy that is the driving force of everything. Nothing can happen without Hashem making it happen all the time. Right, that Hashem is mechadesh the world all the time at every moment. It's not that Hashem just made the world and then it runs on its own. Hashem's constantly making and remaking and remaking and remaking. Everything exists only because Hashem is mechadish, the energy of each thing all the time.
Right.
It does work with free will, although it happens to be one of the major conundrums and something that we are told works together, that free will and Hashem's divine guidance work at the same time, but we're also told not to contemplate it too much because it's not really something we can wrap our minds around. It doesn't work with human brain energy to actually see it on a deep level. But on a lighter level, the mushel that I used to just talk about how it could be, and remembering that mushels are always small that you have to make big, but just imagine your kid comes home from school hungry. You could choose, I mean, I'll choose for my kid, but you could choose two snacks, right, that you know what your kid's going to pick, right? So you can choose chocolate kisses and liver sautéed, right? So or Brussels sprouts, whatever your kids hate, right? So you could pick something they hate and something they love and offer them each, right? Which, well, would you like for your snack? You know what they're going to pick, but they still get to pick while you're offering. You already have foreknowledge of their choice, but they still, that doesn't abrogate their ability to choose what they want to choose in the moment. So that's just a muscle. Of course, a kid could always surprise you. Of course, you might misunderstand what they really like or dislike. So it's only a muscle. But Hashem knows what's going to happen, and at the same time, we still get to choose. So that's a whole longer discussion. But anyway, back to this. So we have the whole concept that Hashem runs everything through angelic energies, and I think we discussed some of that earlier in Derech Hashem. But here, what we want to do is understand this in the concept, in the whole pathway of theurgy. So theurgy is the ability to use Shemot Hashem to change things. So if we understand what we've discussed already in Derech Hashem, that there is a physical world, there's a spiritual world with angelic forces that have a hierarchy, and Hashem's energy transfers through those levels down into the manifestation of this earth physically. And we also understand there's a physical world that works according to its physical laws that we can observe and understand. And that is energized by spiritual forces, but that there's rules that set up the whole thing and it works within those rules. So we understand that naming something has to do with its essence, in at least in Lashon HaKodesh, but the concept of naming something. So now what we want to understand is how can we, if we're here in this world, in order to expand our souls, and if we're using everything physical in this world as a tool for soul expansion, so every physical, whether it's our body, whether it's our kitchens, whether it's our homes, whether it's our community, everything physical in this world is a workshop for soul development and is a tool, not just a workshop, it's not just the arena in which we develop our souls, but the physical itself has to be used in order to develop our souls. Our souls can't grow without the physical tools being applied to it. And we understand there are limitations in the physical just by the fact that it's physical, it has to have certain limitations. So then we might see that we could run up against a problem where the physical limits the soul expansion. And we might have some soul exercises or soul growth that's necessary to enter into that we can't necessarily because of our physical limitations. So this is where theurgy comes into play. Theurgy, the ability to use Shemot Hashem in certain, I just got beat, so maybe missed a sentence. The ability to use Shemot Hashem in certain mystical ways serves a few different purposes. One purpose is to manipulate creation in ways that we couldn't do physically. And another purpose is to transcend the physical limitations of our body. And the third is to be able to rise above our physical bounds to gain entrance into spiritual arenas that we can't. So let's look at those a little bit. So this is all still part of the review. So there is the ability to manipulate creation beyond the, to allow creation to act in an independent way. So let's just look for a second. We have this chain of transmission, right? There's forces that cause malachim to work, malachim that cause things to happen make things manifest in the earth. So let's just say rain, right? So Hashem says it's time for there to be a wheat crop in the Midwest, and so we need rain. And so he touches off the kochot that will touch off the malachim, that will touch off the clouds, that will touch off the rain, that will touch off the earth, and eventually wheat comes up. So that's a chain of events that, in a way, is a natural chain of events. Even though it starts in Shemayim, we still call that a natural chain of events because that's the way Hashem set it up, that it has to go from A to B to C to D to E. But it turns out that it's possible to hit just level C to make things happen there. You don't have to necessarily start with A and doesn't necessarily have to end with E. You could just work on level C. So how does that work? Let's say you're an Indian shaman. You do a rain dance. You want to call upon the rain yourself. Rather than talking to Hashem directly, it is possible through the non-kadosh methods, but still possible, to go straight to the malach of rain and talk to that malach about rain and have that malach send rain, or even to cause it. Sometimes it's even possible to force the hand of that malach by using Hashem Hashem that activates the energy of that malach to send the rain. That's what theurgy means, is to be able to use Hashem Hashem to activate an energy on an intermediate level without it being tipped off from above and without it necessarily going all the way to below. So you could just, let's say it's wheat season, you want the proper rain, but somebody's trying to, I don't know, I'm just making up things here, trying to interrupt a war, and they need a terrible rainstorm. So it is possible through methods of either theurgy, either through shemot and through kadosh methods, or through kishuv, through magic, through non-kadosh, tame methods, it's possible to stir up that rain. This is where we get stories of Hasidic rebbes who are able to cause different things to happen, cause fires to go out. You know, I wish I could remember some of those direct stories, but there are stories of rebbes where there was a forest fire encroaching on a town, and they're able to make the fire go away. That's because they're able to use shemot to go to the malach that's controlling that fire and get it to stop. So there are certain things like this, and there are kochot atuma that can be drawn on. That's where we see in Mitzrayim, the Gemara says that there are 10 points of magic came to the world, 9 went to Mitzrayim, the last point was distributed among the rest of the world. The Rambam doesn't, but pretty much the rest of the Jews seem to believe in black magic, although the Rambam certainly is a strong opinion. But the Ramban and others who follow him, and the Ramchal is more of a Ramban kind of a guy, do understand that there's such a thing as black magic, which is really the manipulation of forces from Kochot HaTuma rather than from Kochot HaTahara. So why would Hashem allow such manipulation of forces? Right. So he allows the Tumadic ones in order for there to be free will still existent on the planet and above the planet, existent in our spheres, so that we can choose, if he's giving us the power to be able to use Shemot Hashem in order to interfere in things for certain practical and positive reasons, he also wants to grant us that power to be able to interfere and interact in a negative way so that we can choose to either A, not do it, or B, only go through the pathways of Kedusha if we are going to do it. So it maintains free will, that there's the ability to do it in a negative way as well. So this whole chapter and the word theurgy actually refers to both the Kochot HaTahara and the Kochot HaTuma pathways for interfering in the natural order of things through using these special methods. This particular chapter in Derech Hashem does not go into practical how do you do this. It's not a primer. If somebody wants to do practical applied Kabbalah and use Shemot Hashem, they're not going to get it out of this chapter. Just the fact that it does exist is what's here. Let's see. So function number one of theurgy is to allow us the ability to cause some level of the chain of transmission of events in the world, whether on a spiritual or on a physical level, to operate independently. It allows us to have some ability to manipulate creation. So that's number one. That manipulation of creation can only happen, however, within certain rules and strictures that Hashem lays down. So there's still, even though there's the regular rules of how things work, as a level one, and this is allowing us to go into non-regular rules of how things work, to transcend those regular rules, still the transcendence of the regular rules has its own rules and limitations, and Hashem only allows it to go so far. And above and beyond that, Hashem could completely disable it from working altogether if he chooses, if he doesn't want it to happen. With that in mind, it seems strange. I mean, just looking at recent events, it seems strange that Hashem wouldn't use that power to prevent, let's say, a Sandy Hook massacre or a plane flying into the Twin Towers or a Scud missile coming into Israel, and he probably does use it. That Scud missiles coming into Israel probably is a very good example of where he does just choose to make something that should work, not work. Right? It's aimed correctly. It has enough firepower. It was even davened for from people who really do believe in Hashem and his energy. And daven, they send it with an Allahu Akbar prayer into Israel, and Hashem stops it midway and says, no, this is not going where you aimed and where you hoped, because I choose for it not to happen. So that definitely happens in the world, where Hashem just circumscribes it. Even though physically and according to the regular laws of nature it should work, Hashem just says, nope, this one's not going. It does happen. And sometimes he doesn't do that. Let's say in Sandy Hook, where he didn't cause the person's car to not work, or he didn't cause the guns to jam up, or he didn't cause the school to be empty that day, or whatever it was. He could have caused a million things to make that not happen, and he chose not to. So he does, I mean, that's a whole different discussion, why Hashem does allow things to happen. But for here, let's just say there is the ability that Hashem can cause something to stop in mid-tracks if he so chooses. So we're not going into why he so chooses, but that he could. So things happen according to the natural order of events. We can transcend natural order of events according to these principles and cause something else to happen. That is still has a certain type of rule that it can only work up to that level. And even within that, Hashem can circumscribe it further and just make it not work if he wants to. But he does allow for us to be engaged in many different ways, even in ways that look like it's against his will. So we definitely have to expand the concept, our concept of what is in accordance with Hashem's will, which is a place that causes people a lot of grief. So I'll just say specifically as Makarvot, because this class is aimed at Makarvot, so it's not just for us to understand, which we do have to understand these principles more deeply, but to help us explain to others. So here's a place where explaining to others can get very tricky. So it's just something to contemplate on ourselves a little bit more in terms of why Hashem does allow certain bad things to happen. So once you get to the place, a lot of people want to just say Hashem only allows the good, and Hashem isn't there in where bad happens. So that would really be a dualistic view, almost a Zoroastrian view, in which there's a dichotomy. Right, Christianity, some streams of Christianity believe in that dichotomy. That's why they have God and the devil. Right, so that God runs good and the devil runs bad, and they're competing forces. Not all streams of Christianity have that, but that is a strong theme in Christianity. Flip Wilson, a comedian from, I guess, probably the 60s and the 70s, made himself famous at the line, "The devil made me do it." That was one of his routines. But there is a concept within Christianity that there's a negative force that can make you do something. We don't have that in Yiddishkeit. We do have a concept of being sorely tempted and having a strong Yetzirah, but it can't make you do anything. It can just push you, can make it more difficult not to do something, but it can't force you. It can never force your hand. So there's that. Dichotomy. So that's one view, which is inconsistent with Jewish philosophy, that God is not where there's evil. God is where there is evil, because God allows it to happen. So once you get to that place where God allows it to happen, then you can go to the next negative place, which is God must be mean. He must be cruel. He must be, either it's random, or God, if God is there, God must be mean. He must be laughing at us. And I've met a lot of different people who have, whether it's in response to the Holocaust or in response to their own personal tragedies, or in response to many different things, can say, that's not a God I can believe in. I can't believe in a God who's so cruel or who allows so much cruelty to exist in the world. So that's a place that we have to get past too. So then the next level to go from there is really into the much more expansive level, which is probably not fully where we need to be, but it's where I can see so far, which is the level that Hashem runs everything, letova. Everything is run for good, and even the negative eventually will become good. So I just heard a shiur from Rabbi Jeremy Kagan on TorahAnytime.com, and it was actually on Esther Wien's list, because she invited him to give a shiur in her stead. So even though he's the giver of the shiur, you have to go to Esther Wien at TorahAnytime.com to hear it. But he explains why Yaakov was saying Kriyat Shema when he met Yosef. What was up with that? Why specifically Kriyat Shema? And we don't have to understand necessarily that he was actually saying the words of the Shema, but rather creating or doing something, thinking something, saying something that acknowledged the Yichud of Hashem in his life at that very moment. But why at that very moment? So he talks about how for Yaakov, who really believed that, who understood prophetically that it was going to be a father of 12 sons who would be the linchpin of history, who would be the father of the nation that would change the course of the world, and that he was going to be, once he had 12 sons, he realized he's going to be that man. He's going to be the one who changes all of history, from whom the changes of history flow. And then Yosef is kidnapped. Well, Yosef is, in his mind, dead. So now he can no longer... His entire world is transformed by the loss of Yosef. And then there's this famine. And then the other children are threatened. And then off to Egypt. And then there's this maniacal ruler of Egypt who's out to get his family, who's specifically interested in each one of the boys. And he takes one prisoner and he wants the other one to come. And look, it's maniacal what's going on, just to get some food. And meanwhile, they're starving. They don't have a choice. The whole thing, it's so scary, bringing the father down. And then finally, you know, the whole long story, which looks like one negative thing after another, after another, after another, after another, and it all adds into, once he realizes that it's Yosef and that he's the one who's running the whole show, and that that's what created the whole pathway for the children, for us to become the B'nai Yisrael, for us to become the transformers of the world, he sees that everything that looked like what was taking away his whole dream is what went into making his whole dream manifest. So he was able to see what looks like Din, the Elohim aspect of Hashem, and what looks like Chesed, the Hashem, the Yudke Vavke aspect of Hashem, was united in the One. He only got that on the background of what looked so negative. He was able to see the positive, that whole transformation. So if we can see the Maaseh Avot Siman Labanim, what happened in the past is a portent for the future that we will be able to see in the future. In the future, we will be able to look back and see how all that negative stuff wasn't just random negative things, and wasn't just hard things for us to go through, and wasn't even just workshops for our soul to grow and expand through, but was in fact each one a necessary step for the ultimate revelation of the oneness of Hashem in the world, and for us all to be able to get it and grow with it, and it will all be transformed into positive. Hopefully we could try to understand and be patient right now in places where we don't see that there is a oneness and a wholeness that is the purpose of everything happening. Does that make sense so far? You're probably muted because there's construction noises, but...
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Okay, so back to this then. So now what we have is, within that whole stream of things, we can still manipulate stuff that's going on. So that's what the theurgy is here. It's man's power then also to rise above the physical limitations of his body. So sometimes we might need to, and this is only for those who are capable of it, but let's just say, because we're familiar with this paradigm, but others can access it too, let's just go back to the realm of a Hasidish Rebbe, who's able to sometimes give a bracha that transforms, whether it's helping a barren woman conceive, or somebody who's sick get healthy, or somebody who's conscripted into the army not get conscripted. Whatever it is, there are things that we have heard about where something can be accessed outside of the normal confines of our physical body, so that we can achieve things, so that we can go where we need to go without us being limited by the physical. But it's even beyond that, without us being limited by our physical bodies. Beyond that, sometimes we need to rise above the physical realm that we're living in order to access spiritual realms. So let's say, for instance, that would be in the realm of prophecy. And that's what the prophecy schools are about. Apparently, there were many prophecy schools during during Beis HaMikdash times, and those schools were not necessarily to produce students that would be able to bring Nevuah to us so that we would know what's going to go on, or so that we could be rebuked, which is much of the Nevuah that's been recorded. But there were actually, apparently, millions of prophets. Only a few of their prophecies have been recorded. Only those that are for us today were recorded, that have to do with us today and throughout the generations. But the concept of prophecy and why there were so many prophets is because the concept of prophecy is the ability to transcend oneself and transcend one's environment, to tap into spiritual roots that we couldn't usually tap into. And when one Jew can do that, one Jew then feeds the Jewish people through their spiritual transcendence. So if you understand that we are all connected to each other in a spiritual root, which is the essence of why we do Kiruv, we reach out to other Jews who are not behaving in spiritually productive ways in order to try to teach them that there is a spiritual system here and there's a way to behave that is spiritually productive. The reason why we do that is because each Jew influences another. So we want to at least pull people, you know, we use this boat analogy, right, that everybody's in the boat, we're all rowing. Some people are not rowing, so they're just lazy. Okay, so we pull them along with our rowing. But some people are actually destructive. They want to drill a hole under their seat. And we'll tell them, no, you can't. And he says, why not? It's my seat. I could drill as many holes as I want. Well, obviously, you can't. We're all in the same boat, right? So if you drill holes, we're going to sink. It's one thing for you not to row. It's another thing for you to row in the opposite direction, which some people do. That's another thing to drill a hole, right? So we all want to, we want to get everybody rowing in the same direction, to stop with the holes, to stop with the rowing opposite, stop with the laziness, and start with the actually all rowing in the same direction, because we are all connected to each other. So if we understand that in terms of Kiruv, which is easier to see, then let's just go in terms of prophecy, where if one person can achieve a prophetic state, whether or not they bring a Nevuah that makes a difference for us understanding anything, the fact that they can achieve that transcendent state above the physical and the physical limitations of their body and of this world means that they're channeling a spiritual energy and nourishment into, through themselves, into the Jewish people. And that really buoys the Jewish people to have that level of prophecy flowing into us. So some of that can be achieved. Yeah?
So, I mean, the original concept of this is sort of, to me, it seems very, very high, like sort of like creating a golem or whatever. And as we're sort of, it seems like we're bringing it down a little bit. Like, is it something that we learn about just to understand what other people that are like way above us do? Or is there some aspect of this that's relevant to something that we do?
So that's an excellent question. Because this chapter really is just kind of high. However, I think it's important for us to understand this. It doesn't mean that we're going to apply it practically right this very minute in our lives, but we do need to understand how it all works, because there are small aspects of what might apply to us. Certainly through tefillah, when we sometimes we get to a deep level of tefillah, and we personally, or me anyway personally, and those who I teach, unless they're learning from other people about these higher levels, are not entering into these realms of practical theurgy. However, to know that it exists allows us to know that the far-reaching implications of what we do. So, for instance, let's just use a nutrition muscle, right? So we're not going to become nutritionists. However, the more that we understand about nutrition, the more we understand that even a tiny bit can make a big difference. For instance, when somebody's expecting, and anybody who's planning on being expecting should start right away, it's important to take vitamin B, folic acid. It's important to take folic acid because that can prevent spina bifida, and it's important for brain development in the first 6 weeks, right? And you don't need much. It's a tiny amount. But if you don't have it, it can cause serious birth defects. Now, we get it from a lot of things that we eat, but some people don't get enough. Once you understand how important a tiny element of nutrition can be, you know, the relationship between rickets and vitamin D, or between scurvy and vitamin C, so that sailors could take limes with them. That's why they're called limeys, right? Because they used to get scurvy on boats, and they started, once they realized if they put lime juice in their beer, they don't get scurvy. Once you understand nutrition, you can learn how to manipulate it a little bit in your life, And you can know that sometimes when you're not feeling well, you need to go to an expert on chemical manipulation, whether it's through drugs or through supplements or through foods, because you now understand that there is something about chemicals in food and in brain and in body that makes a difference in how you function at a practical everyday level. So once we understand that there is such a thing as theurgy, that there is such a thing as our ability to transcend the physical and even our physical bodies and even the physical world, we could understand, let's say, for instance, a practical implication would be in tefillah, right? So let's say we know somebody who has stage 4 cancer, and the doctor is saying, no way, this person, there's nothing we can do. We know, because we know this, we know that tefillah can make a difference. It doesn't mean it's going to work, but that it can work. We have to know that. And we can only know it when we start to know how things work. So we know that it's possible to transcend the physical, that even though there are physical laws that say when you have stage 4 cancer, you're going to be dead soon. That's the law of the physical. But we know that it's possible to transcend that. And it's not just a fluffy thing. It's not just prayer works. It's that there is a concept that Hashem set into the world, a spiritual pathway that one can access that permits them to transcend physical limitations. It's there.
So the goal is that, so we can see on our level that whenever there's a challenge or something, there's always, there could be more beyond the typical pathway of the physical world that we could do, whether it's tefillah or whatever, to try to, on our level, I guess,
yeah.
You know, even if it is, I guess, going to Rabbanim and getting brachos, or people that like can't have kids and they, you know, do these schoolas or whatever, just doing our piece to try to sort of, I guess, quote unquote, manipulate. But like in
right.
terms of like, you know, right.
It is.
And
so we're not.
And HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us permission to do that.
Yes.
At our level.
Set up a system. Yes, absolutely. So it's not,
right.
it's not, right, and we want to understand it on a more sophisticated level, because a lot of people see it as, well, if you beg Hashem, he'll change his mind. That's an unsophisticated way of seeing it. It's a way that's okay for a child to see it, or a young, very, very young adult, let's say adolescent, to see it before they've come to a more sophisticated place. But it's very important for us to transform our thinking and to understand it's not about begging Hashem, even though it might, the way that we access these energies might come through the pathway of begging Hashem. But it's not about maybe we could change God's mind. When we say changing a gzeira, even saying mishanem makom, mishanem mazal, mishanem shem, mishanem mazal, right? When we do a name change, you know, which we do when somebody's very sick, add a name or change a name. Why do we do that? Because we do understand that there are things we can do that will help us access a transcendence of the physical. That there's such a possibility. Sometimes we're not able to access it enough to make it work. But there is a possibility of that, and we have to know for a fact that it exists, that the world is not just physical and physical laws. So we as Jews and we as from Jews have to understand we are not at war with science like the Christians are, right? We don't believe that science is bad or wrong, even though some Jews have fallen into the trap of thinking that we are. We're not. We can't observe the physical world. We should observe the physical world. Science is about observation and categorization and understanding, but it's only one level. Science stops at the physical, and we don't. So we shouldn't pish-posh science and say, oh, science, schmeins, what is that? You know, what we have to say is, okay, that's the physical understanding, and to the extent that we've been able to unravel the physical mysteries of the world right now, we call that science. And we as from Jews know that there are levels and dimensions beyond the physical that also make a difference, and they also have rules. We can't learn those rules by observation because it's not physical. So that's not how it works. When we talked about in the beginning of this class, our levels of how we name things, right? Our 4 steps of naming things. Let me just review those words that I chose. Let's see, where did I put them? Is I don't see where I made my list, but our 4 steps are observing it, so observation, and then 2. Figuring, after we've looked at something, figuring out what the concept is, so conceptualization. And then number three, giving it a name, calling it something. And number four, after that, we can communicate what it is. That's what science is doing, right? Observing, conceptualizing, naming, communicating. And then starting again, the ability to communicate helps people understand things a little bit more broadly, and then they can continue on with observing differently, conceptualizing differently, naming again, and communicating again. Right? But we have to know that's how science does it, but the spiritual world, you can't do it that way because you can't observe it. That's why we need revelation. That's why we need nevuah. That's why we need teachers who are taught from deeper levels. Sometimes those levels are from inside, and sometimes those levels are from outside. And for this, I'll give it that famous Jewish phrase, whatever that means. Right? So from inside could be Avraham Avinu. We are taught that he learned from his kidneys, whatever that means. Right? But somehow from his guts he learned Torah because he didn't have teachers for that. But there is the possibility of learning from deep inside of us. Hashem put that in us. And then from outside, we understand that the Ramchal himself learned from, again, whatever this means, angelic teachers who came to him. But we definitely have a concept of Ruach HaKodesh and of other forces teaching some of our people. Okay, so we have to be very careful because we don't want to fall into a whole Shabtai Tzvi syndrome where anybody can claim anything and people will believe it because these things are true, but not in every case. But we have teaching that comes from deep inside and far outside that's not the normal way of learning things, which is where we do sometimes have conflict with science, because science will look at us and say, oh, crazy. There's one way to learn things. It's observing the physical and then categorizing it. And we say, yes, that's an important way. And Hashem has revealed to us additional ways of understanding things, not ways that we can observe, so they're not ways that we can prove. But they are ways that are true. And so that's what this is about, is how can you engage. The chapter on theurgy is how can you engage in those extra ways. But the reason why we're learning it is to know that they're there and to know that it's possible to engage it. Whether we can or not, we need to know that we can.
Right, like when, it reminds me of when I think it's just what it says about in the time of Hanukkah, the Maccabim did Shuba on their level, on such a deep level that it actually, you know, changed, I guess, the destiny of the Klal Yisrael at that time, but also infused something into all of us for future generations that we have the potential to tap into at that time. So I guess Tshuva is another pathway, Tefillah is another pathway, and then there are these other, I guess these are just different pieces that we can relate to of how to use the concept.
Well, if you think, so Tshuva, so that I read that article, Rabbi Niven cited it in his Hanukkah drash, so I looked it up and read it, and it was fascinating to see. But Dessler does talk about a tshuva that's so deep. So there's a tshuva that can transform your own destiny, personal tshuva. And then there's a tshuva that can be so deep that it transforms an entire generation. And then there's a tshuva that's so deep that it can transform future generations as well. So, and that's what the Maccabim accomplished, which is why we celebrate Hanukkah, because certainly the military victory didn't last long, but the spiritual transformation was permanent. That's why we have the Yontif of Hanukkah. So, so we have to understand that we can accomplish things that transcend the physical, that create permanent implications for either ourselves or our families or our entire nation. So it's important. That's why we're learning this particular chapter. I mean, we're learning the whole book. Of course, it's in the context of the book. But this particular chapter, a reason why it would be included is because this whole book is about how the world is set up and how it works, so that we can understand that there are different pathways to engage in, and mainly so that we can understand that everything that we do makes a difference. There is no parv act. So when you're remodeling a house, raising a family, trying to make a parnasa, parking your car, whatever it is that you're doing, everything can be transformative. Everything can be kadosh.
Right, and I hear from it also that you're never stuck, meaning as much as we feel sometimes stuck, there might be other pathways that we need, Hashem wants us to try to push to in different ways that we maybe been typical.
Right. Absolutely. So that's the perfect take-home message of this particular shiur today. Is right, you're never stuck. There are pathways that we can't observe that we have to learn about. Right, the only way you can understand it is if somebody teaches you. because not something observable, but Hashem did set up the world with pathways that transcend our physical boundaries, whether it's our body's boundaries or our environment's boundaries or the laws of nature's boundaries. We can transcend them.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting.
So on that note, that's really just a review of the class that I gave last week, which is great. Because it's said in a totally different way, and hopefully the Zad Hashem next week will continue from here.
Great, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Be well. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.